We're diving into Invincible today, why it works, why other shows can fall flat in some areas, and what deeper message there is beneath all of the punching. I'm Wes Young. This is In My Own Words. Spoiler warning. Now buckle up.
May we count on you in the future?
Yeah, I think so.
And bored of this.
Son, we need to talk. What I'm about to tell you will change everything.
Dad.
In case you have completely skipped over watching the quick words I produced on this same show, allow me to give you a brief overview of my previous show, which was in itself a brief overview of an entire other series. Mark Grayson is a young boy who is entering his senior year of high school, trying to fit in, trying to find the girl of his dreams, and dealing with college applications. His father, Omni-Man, the world's strongest superhero, is giving him a bit of a hard time about not yet getting his superpowers. Mark really wants these powers. You see, since he was a young boy, he's wanted nothing more than to be a superhero, just like his dad. And then one day, while taking out the trash at his job, he slings the large bag of food waste clear into orbit. And he knows he just got his powers. His life is forever changed by this fact, and he must learn things about himself, the world around him, and his own family. Now, there, I saved you, 8 minutes of listening to my voice? Good for you. Anyway, this show is phenomenal. You see, in the first episode, you're introduced to the Guardians of the Globe. The Guardians in this universe are a stand-in for our Justice League. And this group is comprised of very familiar powers that we're all aware of or have seen some kind of variation of from all of the superhero content we've consumed for the past 50, 60 years. This group is renowned and respected through the entire globe, and no one can go toe-to-toe with this group and survive. Omni-Man, the stand-in for Superman in this universe, is a Vultramite, which is an alien race that, according to Omni-Man himself, after they have completed their training on Viltrum, they must travel throughout the universe and help the planets which are lesser developed. Omni-Man views himself as the sole defender of Earth. Therefore, he doesn't join any teams, but will help out any other superhero. Mark, during this first episode, gets his powers and trains with his dad, learning very valuable lessons about how when he fights villains, they're not going to pull their punches. He must be ready for anything. And most importantly, when he is scared and afraid, he has to learn to push through that to accomplish his goal. If he can learn to push through that fear, he can accomplish anything. During this time is when he comes up with his superhero alter ego, Invincible, which, even according to the characters of the show, is a little bit optimistic. Mark, at the end of the episode, dons his iconic blue and yellow outfit and begins assisting Teen Team. I would assume this universe's Teen Titans, though their powers are nothing alike. He meets this group of friends and finds out there are some superheroes that even go to his high school. Everything is looking up for Mark. He finally got his childhood goal. And I guess, as the credits start to roll, we're going to be along this journey while he grows and becomes the very... Oh, wait, there's something happening. Something is going on after the credits. That's weird. The Guardians of the Globe are all being called back to their base, and even the way the shots are framed and the way the characters speak is a lot more realistic. This feels heavy. I don't really understand. Out of the blue, Omni-Man murders the Guardians of the Globe. Omni-Man is brutal, and up until this point of the show, you have seen no gore. It has been equivalent to those 90s and early 2000s superhero cartoons, rated TVG for children. This is incredible gore, and if it were not animated, it would be near obscene. Omni-Man slaughters these heroes. He's angry and villainous, and he will not yield. These heroes are butchered. It is bloody. You see their brains, their guts, everywhere. It is silent. There is not a single note of heroic music, which has accompanied the entire series up until this point. Omni-Man's blue eyes are piercing and fierce. He's beaten within an inch of his life himself fighting these heroes and falls to the ground, passing out. The second episode opens, which everyone who watched the first episode will immediately watch the second. The second episode opens with medical personnel and soldiers of the Global Defense League, essentially a paramilitary organization that assists superheroes and superhero logistics. They arrive knowing that there was an attack and clean up afterwards. All of the Guardians of the Globe have been killed and are announced dead. Omni-Man is taken to a hospital located deep beneath the Pentagon, and they are doing everything they can to bring him back from the dead. Omni-Man is presumed to have been a part of this attack and that he is a victim. However, immediately, suspicions are aroused by this paramilitary organization that have repeatedly asked him questions about what happened, and he can't, quote-unquote, remember what happened. This is the real plot of the show. Omni-Man continues to train his son Invincible, while Invincible must find his footing and become the type of hero he wants to be. And there are neat moments throughout the show where he wants to save people, but Omni-Man is against it, even though Omni-Man should be for it. This conflict is behind the scenes and very subtle with all of their interactions. Omni-Man is constantly using phrases we're all familiar with, such as responsibility and doing the greater good and being there for his own family, yet there's this dark tinge to them. There's this different light on these phrases than we're used to because we remember the end of that episode. It was shocking. Personally, I had no idea it was coming. I had inferred that Omni-Man might be less than forthright with his backstory, and maybe he will be related to the villain at the end of the series, the big Mac Daddy villain. I had no idea that the villain of the show was going to be our hero's own father. Though that sounds derivative, the way it plays out is phenomenal, and it's unique in that he is a genuine parent. He genuinely wants what's best for his son, only how he views what's best is totally different than how Mark views what's best. Because in the first episode, he has an interaction with his mom when he says, "I'm not sure I can be the next Omni-Man. I'm nothing like Dad. I'm more like you." His mom is a human, soft-spoken and good-natured. Mark takes these qualities with the powers of Omni-Man to truly become an amazing hero. And he is not yet at the level of Omni-Man. Throughout the series, we see that he's not as skilled not as strong and must learn from mistakes that a young adult might make trying to become the greatest hero in the world. All the while, under the same roof as one of the most insidious and evil characters I have ever seen in a TV show. J.K. Simmons, of course, voices Omni-Man, and his performance is spine-chilling. It is amazing seeing this character balance what he believes are good intentions with vile acts. The writing is superb, and the coloring of the series is phenomenal throughout, because each episode gets slightly darker. Every shade gets a little bit darker, and there's even a not-so-subtle nod to this with the opening title card. In the first episode, The Invincible is written yellow with a blue background, and it is proud and clean and crisp, and every episode after, more blood is spattered on this title card, until the very end of the series, in which the blood nearly covers the entire card. The whole episode takes place with a cloudy, dim background. And because of another interaction that Omni-Man has before the final conflict, his eyes are red and bulging. He is far more villainous than prior. The blood from his previous attacks has stained the white parts of his uniform. Now he's a red, fierce, bloodied mess. The visual cues that accompany a lot of this show are another area where it sticks out in your head. The framing, the way the characters move, in fact, just the way they fly, is different enough that it is striking and it catches your attention. Personally, I love the way the characters look when they fly. There's a weight to it, and a different mechanic is used to explain flying. Omni-Man states that he's able to control the space around them to use anywhere as leverage to propel a punch or movement. So the characters move with their core directing the flight instead of the hands or feet propelling them like we're very used to. Recently, only one other movie has used this kind of mechanic, which is Hancock. I remember when Hancock came out. I loved the way he flew. It's a lot more grounded, even though it's anything but. If you remember in the early Iron Man films, the hands and feet were his propulsion. So the way that he flew looked very different than the old Superman movies, where the character seemed to propel with nothing and there was no force behind it. These minor little changes to the visualization really give Invincible this cutting-edge feel, but the animation style of an early 2000s children's cartoon. So, I've given you a bit of the plot. Let me sprinkle in some story beats along the way. Omni-Man's wife becomes suspicious of her husband after a character known as Damien Darkblood, a demon PI who fights for justice to redeem his own soul, visits her and simply asks questions. Why has your husband not told you anything about that attack? That's rather strange, don't you think? And after this conversation between Damien Darkblood and Mrs. Grayson, the show takes on a much more akin to Breaking Bad style, in that we see this father, who is evil and vile, attempting to keep this secret from both the authorities, his best friends, and his family. And what's striking is during these inner episodes, Mark is growing and having to learn very valuable lessons about his secret identity, about responsibility, and all the while learning that human life is intrinsically valuable. And he wants to be a hero that saves as many lives as he can. In the second episode, which is his first outing as Invincible, he fails to save the life of an elderly woman from an alien attack. And the reason he fails to save her life is that he can't control his flying yet. At that time, he's attempting to rescue her, falls into a hole, and smashes a lot of her bones. He personally takes this on and uses this horrible moment of the show as motivation to strive to be a better hero, to help everyone he can. Unfortunately, that doesn't pan out like it would in a normal hero series. He makes mistakes because he's not used to it. He's growing. He's becoming a hero. He's not a hero. And just as it is in real life, he is needed to be a hero well before he is personally prepared. During this time, Omni-Man is slowly becoming more distant. He even mentions how ever since Mark got his powers, something's changed in him. It's almost like something biologically has changed. And then, when he realizes he's been caught and found out, he knows he must tell Mark the truth. When he decides to finally reveal the truth of his origin to Mark, we learn the shocking reality. Viltrum, a planet filled with superhuman abilities, the strongest, most powerful beings in the universe. They decided that only the best should survive. They had an all-out planetary civil war. They killed just over half of the entire population, women, children. And then, with the most hardened and emotionless beings left, they decided to spread this philosophy throughout the galaxy. They would visit planets, insidiously hide as a protector, and then eliminate all they deem to be too weak. Omni-Man has decided that now is the time. Humans are too weak to survive, especially if his, in his mind, weak son is more powerful than any of them. He tells Mark that if Mark stands in his way, he will kill him too. He's done it before. He says Voltramites live thousands of years. Why would you ever get attached to a human who could die, and then you must live thousands and thousands of years after them? There will be a replacement family. He insinuates that even his mother, his wife, can be replaced because they mean nothing. It's a powerful, powerful scene. And right before he kills him, he asks Mark, who's going to be there for you in 1,000 years? What human will be here? And Mark says, barely through his breath, you will be. This triggers a flashback of when he was very young and Omni-Man was watching Mark play T-ball. He was bored to tears. He didn't want to be there. He said, I could be saving other people. I don't want to be here. And his wife, Mrs. Grayson, says, just watch. This is true humanity. Watch your son. Mark hits a ball into the outfield, and a very human emotion takes over Omni-Man as he begins to cheer for his son. He becomes proud of his son for rounding the bases and making it home. Is a very human moment, and it is chilling when you see it, and then it contrasts with the current moment where Omni-Man has beaten his son to a pulp. Omni-Man can't handle this contrast, smashes his fists into the earth, and leaves, fleeing the planet. Mark spends weeks in a hospital, recovering from these injuries, and must weigh whether or not he wants to even be a hero after all of this. And then he realizes that he wants to save this planet filled with wonderful people. He knows that the Voltramites will eventually return, but he knows he's going to have plenty of time to learn and prepare for the next fight. And that's where season one ends. It is an amazing finale. When you watch the episodes, which I did over the course of only 2 days, you see Mark grow into a not as polished, a little bit weaker, and not as smart version of Omni-Man by the end of the series. And you see that he has this morality about him, these virtues that make him head and shoulders above Omni-Man. From the very beginning, even before the great reveal at the end of the first episode, Omni-Man seemed to look down on humanity. He seemed to view them as weaker, and they need his help. And he will be there to protect them. He is their only savior. It's a real look into a nice little abusive mindset. But Mark views it as a privilege to save humanity, to protect humanity. So where do other shows fall? Where are similar plot lines used correctly, and how about those subverting of expectations? Well, we're going to cover that right after this brief ad. I'll see you soon. Before we continue much further, I want to address the elephant in the room. You see, Amazon a few years back debuted a very similar sounding show, another subversive take on the superhero genre, The Boys, which I'll very likely cover a little more in depth later on. The Boys is similar in the sense that it applies realistic physics and violence to a superhero setting. However, The Boys is live action. It's meant to take on the same look as the newest Justice League and Zack Snyder iteration. It applies dark humor and some controversial content to make its point. The violence is intense in The Boys, and because it's live action, it's kind of a rough watch. And there is something to be said with the use of animation versus the use of live action. And I believe that this will be one of those series talked about in years to come, because with the success of Into the Spider-Verse and the success of Invincible, it shows there is an adult market for mature superhero shows, even ones that employ violence and gore, that I think The Boys will lose out on. Now, The Boys is a great series with great characters, writing, and amazing twists. However, there's something a little bit more palatable about watching someone's guts ripped out of them when it's drawn versus when it's happening right in front of you. Now, let's move on to a much more controversial topic, I guess is a good word to use. The fact that this show employs one of the most necessary, yet overused and misused styles of writing, and that is subverting the viewer's expectations. You see, in filmmaking, the use of subverting expectations can be overused and misused so poorly that the audience will feel that they were lied to. Now, you may be saying, oh, if you're subverting expectations, then you're definitely lying to us. You're having us think one thing, and then bam, something else. Well, to, I guess, take a line from the animated comedy series Bob's Burgers, a twist is not a lie. See, a twist must be necessary, and it must fill in certain gaps and oddities that were intentionally left. In other words, there must be a trail of breadcrumbs that when the audience finds out about the twist, they don't feel that they were lied to. They feel smarter. They feel that they've solved a mystery. Well, the inciting incident, which is Omni-Man's killing of the Guardians of the Globe, sets off this cascade effect throughout the entire series. And the subversion is the fact that Omni-Man has been painted as this hero archetype. Real quick, to pull back from The Boys, the hero archetype is blatantly vile from the beginning. In fact, the very opening is their equivalent of the Flash, A-Train, running clear through a woman, and she explodes. We know, no matter what, that the heroes are not good. They're painted in a very vile light. So with the reveal that Homelander, the Superman equivalent, is an absolute psychopath, well, we're not shocked by it. We are surprised by the part that he plays in the larger conspiracy. So as far as the twist goes, it's not substantial. We don't feel smarter because of it. We don't feel like anything new is revealed. We simply see greater depths of depravity. And as far as subverting expectations go, Star Wars handled it poorly, if you recall, with The Last Jedi episode. They, instead of having Luke be this great hero, he was a fallen titan. There was a lot of mishandling of subverting expectations. You see, when you decide to subvert expectations as a writer, you're employing one of the greatest tools all writers have. You can surprise your audience. That being said, some audiences don't want to be lied to. They don't want to be sold on this idea of, oh, a superhero show that is more hardcore. Oh, man, what? I'm expecting certain things, certain events to happen. Invincible nails every single one of them. When you're expecting to see heroes flying through the air, you get to see it. When you want villains to be evil and vile, you see that too. You see every beat that you want to see, but you're shown something you're not expecting. Have you ever been to a movie where you know the ending, you know the hero is going to succeed, and yet, the moment that it happens, it takes your breath away? It's as if you weren't expecting it. It mimics that very real sense of unknowing the solution when it's revealed. You don't think that certain events will happen. You hope they don't. And the superb use of subverting the expectations is handled expertly. I imagine a lot of this was used in the comic book. And a slight difference is the comic book is drawn to appear as other comic books. It gives the visual style of those and it employs similar tactics that the TV show does. The comic book uses this idea of readers are familiar with other comics, therefore certain tropes can be subverted. The TV show uses these tropes to subvert your expectations from previous TV shows. Another show that attempted to do this was Westworld. Westworld is one of my all-time favorite television shows. I love the writing, I love the concept. The acting and the cinematography are some of the best you will ever see. Their twist villain was handled a lot poorer than Invincible. You see, the twist villain with Westworld was that Dolores would be leading the robot revolution. And we can get into the plot and all of that later, but just know it's Jurassic Park with robots. Dolores is the surprise villain of the show. We're led on this journey where she becomes self-aware at the beginning of the series, while simultaneously we see her origin story of why she hates humanity. And believe me, when we talk about Westworld, I'll get into how that was handled in an awesome way. The reveal was awesome. However, the use of her as a twist villain became pretty obvious before the show wanted it to. They dropped some breadcrumbs and reveals, and it was handled more as you kind of know she's going to become sentient, but oh no, she became the villain. And Westworld's biggest problem is the same problem that a lot of shows have, and that is the use of the mystery box. They don't want to reveal too much, and by keeping their audience in the dark, they can surprise you. Westworld employs that a lot in season one, and then a heck of a lot in season two. And the use of this writing style is, it can be done well, it can be used in a very strong way, but you can also end up in the same way as Lost, where the viewers feel, not that they're lied to, but that the show doesn't know what it's doing. The show doesn't know who's going where, what's going to happen. Now, season one of Westworld is a tight tight season, and when you add season two in with it, you get a good story, but you start to feel like it's not a deus ex machina. You feel like there's this crutch of, oh, wouldn't a big reveal at this moment be cool? And you start to think that it is not earned. And that is the worst emotion you can give your audience, is the idea that a cool moment, a triumphant moment, a big reveal could not be earned because the writer earned it. The television show producers earned it. They worked very hard for this reveal. And then after all of that, after millions and millions of dollars are spent on a TV show, for the audience to not feel like it was earned, think about those silly deaths in soap operas. Or even better, the silly reveals in those old soap operas. Where, oh, surprise, someone who died 2 years ago is actually alive, but they had plastic surgery, so they look different. Oh, no, it's not earned. And audience members can smell that out. They can feel it. They know something's not right. And you can dangerously get close to cheese. When a show is cheesy, or a movie is very cheesy, you don't get the right response, and you lose your audience. Invincible handles it perfectly. It toes that line between being a little bit offbeat, a little off kilter, but still grounded. And through that use of skill and through the correct use of subverting expectations, you get this amazing story and you feel every punch. You feel like you've earned every success and you hurt at every defeat. Now, to take us home, I would like to say that everyone who enjoys action television series, deep television series, superhero movies, superhero franchise, comic books, great writing, great characters, development of plot lines, the fact that there are no useless side characters, everyone is important. The show moves fast, so it doesn't waste time. Anyone who loves any of those should 100% watch Invincible. Sign up for a 7-day free trial and binge the heck out of that series if you don't have Amazon Prime. I promise you will not regret it, and you will have a blast in doing so. This has been Wes Young. This is In My Own Words. I would like to real quickly have a big reveal that the In My Own Words official website is up and running. Type in imowpodcast.com and check out Digital Words, the In My Own Words official blog, as well as certain website exclusives. Make sure you subscribe to the blog so that the second I post a new one, it is sent right to your mailbox. Make sure you follow us on social media. On Instagram, we are In My Own Words official. Give us a like, share every post, hashtag spread the word. Make sure that you stay safe. Be kind. Remember, you're not here forever. You are not invincible. And have a great weekend. I'm Wes Young, and this has been In My Own Words.